Order, order.
What should have been a good week in the House for John Key's National-led minority government turned into its worst since taking over the Treasury benches in 2008. Starting on Tuesday, when the Finance Minister's eighth budget was set to end its long journey from presentation on Thursday, May the 25th, the third and final reading of the Appropriation 2016-17 Estimates Bill was shunted aside after the Speaker, David Carter, granted a request from Labour's Deputy Leader and Health Spokeswoman, Annette King, for an urgent debate on contamination of drinking water in Havelock North.
2,000 people. When in the history of New Zealand have we had 2,000 New Zealanders go down with Campylobacter in one hit? I've never heard of it. This is a large-scale health crisis, and it does need urgent investigation by the government.
The Speaker agreed the situation met all the criteria for ordering the House to set aside its normal business, which on Tuesday was to begin with a first reading debate on a tax bill tightening up the regulation of foreign trusts in the wake of the Panama Papers.
There is ministerial responsibility in this matter. New Zealanders rightfully expect to have safe drinking water available. The situation in Havelock North is a serious one. A debate is required. I call on the Honourable Annette King to move that the House take note of urgent matter of public importance.
Mr Speaker, I opened the newspaper this morning and read the editorial in the New Zealand Herald. And it starts like this. How could 1,000 people fall ill anywhere in New Zealand from drinking tap water? How could that happen in a first world country?
Mrs King said there were questions that had to be answered by the Hastings District Council.
And also there is an answer that should have been given in this House today, and I am surprised that the Minister, the Acting Minister of Health, did not take the opportunity to stand in this House and make a ministerial statement about what is happening for the people of Havelock North. I waited. I thought the Minister would take the issue seriously enough that he would have stood and made a ministerial statement. That would have put into perspective what is happening. He could have set out what the Ministry of Health is doing.
Mrs King was followed in the debate by the Acting Minister of Health, Pazeta Samlotowinga.
It's a sad time to stand up here in the House, but it is important to show concern and not play politics like that member opposite who time and time again comes into this House to play politics with the lives of New Zealanders. And we know, sir, that there are 12,000 people in Havelock North that are going through some serious health concerns.
Greens health spokesman Kevin Haig thanked the Speaker for accepting the request for a snap debate.
It's hard to imagine a situation more serious than that that's unfolding in Havelock North currently and more deserving of an urgent debate in this House, sir. The numbers themselves are sobering reading, sir. Already more than 2,000 people ill from what actually is a very serious illness, more than 20 hospitalised, two people currently critically ill and possibly one person already dead from the disease. It's a grave situation, sir.
In full agreement with Kevin Haig on that was the local MP, Nationals member for Tukituki, Craig Foss.
It's been a rough few days in Havelock North, Hawke's Bay. We've been boiling water, we've been buying water, we've been looking after family, we've been looking after our community, we've been feeling for friends, neighbours, community who have had this devastating bug go through them. It has been a tough few days in Havelock North, Mr Speaker, indeed.
Mr Foss said it was not the time for political grandstanding.
People are hurt. Kids are dehydrated. Babies are suffering. Families are suffering. Elderly folk are suffering. Our families are suffering. Now is not the time to get all political about this. Now is the time to deal with it, manage it, help people get better. Now is not the time to grandstand on people's misery, however close it might be to home.
Craig Foss had support from his colleague, Environment Minister Nick Smith.
This is a bit like the Canterbury earthquakes, Mr Speaker, where members opposite will use anything for a sort of political desperation to try and make politics out of issues. Let's just go through a few of the desperate claims from members. Firstly, they criticise Craig Foss. Well, Craig Foss was on to the phone on me on Sunday, raising quite appropriately the issue. They said he had done nothing. These are the same members that continuously claim and have told Sam Litwinger that he shouldn't interfere in council's water supplies. And when something goes wrong in a council water supply, the first thing they want to do is to blame the government.
And Mr Lotto Inge was back on his feet on Thursday after the Speaker accepted a request from Mrs King to ask an extra question under Standing Order 388, which allows for urgent questions to be asked in the public interest.
It's to the Minister of Health. Will he now declare a drinking water emergency under the Health Amendment Act 2007 in light of reports that E. coli has been discovered in a water tanker from a Hastings water supply parked at a school in Havelock North?
The Honourable Pacitar Sam Lotwinger.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister, no. I am advised that the local council is taking action and that the water supplies for Hastings and Flaxmere are now being chlorinated. The daily tests for those supplies have been clear.
The Associate Minister then moved to get the government back on the front foot.
I can also advise that the Minister, Jonathan Coleman, has confirmed there will be a government-initiated independent inquiry into the Havelock North water contamination issue. This will be a wide-ranging inquiry to ensure that all New Zealanders can feel confident about the quality of drinking water supplies.
Mrs King then asked the one supplementary allowed for urgent questions.
So what would it take for the Minister of Health to declare a drinking water emergency, given that over 3,200 people now have been affected by gastric illness, and that the Mayor, Lawrence Yule, is saying that this latest result, quote, is a significant development we cannot explain?
Mr Speaker.
The Honourable Pacitar Sam Lotwinger.
On behalf of the Minister, sir, I continue to be disgusted by the attitude of that member by playing politics with this issue.
Order, 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 order. I apologise for interrupting the Minister. I need to deal with a point of order.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Mine was a straight question, and he started his answer being disgusted by the fact that I've raised this issue in this House when he didn't.
Now we'll allow the Minister to complete his answer.
Well, I'm still disgusted, Mr Speaker, because this member plays politics when what is at issue here is the health and safety of those people in Havelock North and the Hawke's Bay. I visited the Hawke's Bay yesterday, and what the local people told me is they wanted their health services provided and they wanted accountability. And that's what this government is offering through this inquiry and the support that we're giving the local district council.
The Associate Health Minister Bazeta Sam Lotwinger on Thursday, the day the government's new spy agency legislation had its first reading, but which was preceded by the Speaker upholding complaints against the Prime Minister, John Key, arising from his attempt to correct a mistake in an answer to a question on Tuesday from New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters.
Mr Speaker, there are some people that come to New Zealand and claim a refugee or asylum here in New Zealand. Those numbers are significantly less under this government than when the member asking the question was a minister. So this government's done a better job in that category.
Next day, Wednesday, when the government should have been basking in the glow of an earlier-than-expected ratification of the Paris Agreement on greenhouse gas emissions, Mr Peters had another question for the Prime Minister, asking him if he stood by all his statements.
Speaker, yes, with one clarification. When I said yesterday that numbers of people who come to New Zealand and claim refugee status or asylum are significantly less under this government than the Right Honourable Winston, when the Right Honourable Winston Peters was a minister, I should have said the proportion of claim was less.
Labor's Chief Whip Chris Hipkins complained that corrections should be made at the first available opportunity, drawing this response from the Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee.
Mr Speaker, this was not a correction to an answer. It was a clarification of an answer. Quite a different matter. Quite a different matter, Mr Speaker.
Order. The Speaker, who had also received a complaint from Mr Peters in support of Chris Hipkins, returned to the subject on Thursday.
Having considered it very carefully overnight, I think they are both absolutely right. An incorrect answer to a question cannot be corrected or modified by way of clarification.
Previous speakers had ruled that corrections could only be made by way of personal explanation and should be made as soon as the minister became aware of the mistake.
In future, any attempt to correct an answer by way of clarification on a subsequent day will not be acceptable. And I want to thank the members who have raised this issue with me.
Then, on Tuesday, a major distraction that ran right through the week began with this from National backbencher Nut Karaku.
Like every other member of this House, I'm at the mercy of the biscuit tin.
Mr Karaku was responding to a series of questions from Labour MPs asking him, as the member responsible for the Airport Authority's publicising lost property sales amendment bill, what he was hoping to achieve with his member's bill, and why was he doing it now? The bill had been drawn from more than 70 others in the biscuit tin for last week's ballot, and Labour's questions were aimed at drawing attention to the fact that 30 of the proposed members' bills, or nearly half of the 75 currently in the ballot, are from National MPs. Not only do they reduce the chances of MPs from other parties having a win in the ballot, but when they're drawn and debated, they're effectively government bills, taking up some of the precious 3 or 4 hours allocated to members' bills every fortnight. Labour's Chief Whip, Chris Hipkins, suggested that the bill could easily be incorporated in one of the government's omnibus bills, amending a bunch of statutes, and he put this question to Mr Karaku.
Can he confirm that no passengers are any more or less likely to lose their luggage as a result of his bill? And isn't this the type of carry-on that discredits the Parliament?
Complaints from Mr Hipkins and others about the time spent on debating the bill drew this response from the Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee.
Mr Speaker, noticing that there has been a lot of public comment about the bill that has just been in question, and noting also that the Labor Party in particular has said that it could be done some other particular way, and in the last question expressed the time that the House is going to take over this, notwithstanding the fact that they've wasted half an hour this afternoon.
Can I have the point of order, please?
I wish to seek leave, Mr Speaker, for the Airport Authority's publicising lost property sales amendment bill to be read for a third time with a vote taken without debate forthwith.
Leave is sought for that course of action. Is there any objection? There is objection.
That objection came from Winston Peters, and Mr Brownlee will be back with a preview of the week ahead. But first, here's Rhys Lyon with his report on the week just passed in the committee rooms.
Drugs were on the agenda of the Health Committee, first in the form of a petition on melanoma treatment medicines, and later drugs of the psychoactive variety, as the committee looked at a proposal to reclassify the drug known as NBOM. Speaking on that first item of business and presenting her petition calling for full funding for the melanoma drug Keytruda was Lisa Marie Renwick, who acknowledged that since Parliament had first received her petition, the government had decided to fund the medicine, though Ms Renwick criticised the government's drug funding model.
We're fortunate to live in an exciting and innovative time in the development of pharmaceutical treatments for serious diseases such as melanoma. But the fight that melanoma patients have faced to gain access to these treatments has raised serious concerns.
Ms Renwick outlined to the committee the long process it had taken to get Keytruda funded.
The drug was publicly funded in the UK and Australia, but Pharmac declined to fund the drug despite very promising data from clinical trials and the fact that there was no other publicly funded effective treatment available in New Zealand. Representatives from Pharmac repeatedly stated that this drug was not effective and that it was a low priority. The Minister of Health declined to meet with melanoma patients as he said he was unavailable. It was only when the petition began to gain media attention and melanoma sufferers spoke out and made the public aware of their personal stories that funding became available for an immunotherapy treatment.
Ms Renwick called for an overhaul of the government's drugs funding agency, Pharmac.
Unless we make positive changes to our pharmaceutical purchasing model so that it steps into the 21st century with us, as a country, we are going to be left behind. And you can expect many more petitions and petitioners to arrive on the doorstep of Parliament House.
Lisa Marie Renwick presenting that petition signed by over 11,000 people. And the next item of business on the Health Committee's agenda yesterday was a notice of motion seeking to reclassify the psychoactive drug NBOM. Ministry of Health officials told the committee that because of its level of harm, N-bombs should be reclassified from being under the scope of the Psychoactive Substances Act to instead being classified under the Misuse of Drugs Act, which provides for stronger enforcement. After hearing from ministry officials, the committee heard from New Zealand Drug Foundation Executive Director Ross Bell, who sought to put the drug into context.
N-bombs are designed, they're a hallucinogenic drug, and so they're designed to mimic LSD. So often the time users don't know what they're taking. If they're used to having LSD and they have these things instead, they're not sure around the dosage. If you're used to having a couple of tabs of LSD and you have a couple of tabs of this, then you're going to find yourself in quite big problems.
Mr. Bell pointed to an alternative approach to curbing those problems.
What we're seeing around the world in nightclubs and at music festivals, places where people are using these drugs, having services where they can have their drugs checked by professionals and so that they know what they're taking. The users go along, scrape a bit of their pill off or give over their blotter paper. That gets assessed by toxicologists and they get a warning, you know. Did you think it was LSD? Well, it's not. It's this thing instead. So, you know, we suggest you don't use it. And so having these drug checking services would mean that we can, again, for those people who are choosing to use these drugs, keep them safe.
Mr. Bell criticised the Ministry of Health's regulatory impact statement on the reclassification of the drug, saying it didn't address the impacts on drug users who would potentially face criminal convictions if the law was changed. He also warned that the manufacturers of the drugs would strive to keep ahead of any law changes.
New substances, you schedule them in MODA, the chemists tweak it. You know, I think we should anticipate, we would be foolish not to anticipate that. That's exactly what's going to happen here. Chemists always seem to stay a few steps ahead of lawmakers, which is why you could happily keep it as an unapproved product within the Psychoactive Substances Act. That still has quite high enforcement over people who are supplying and manufacturing these substances, but it doesn't give the user a criminal conviction.
New Zealand Drug Foundation Executive Director Ross Bell speaking to the Health Committee on Wednesday. Meanwhile, on Thursday, the Local Government and Environment Committee heard submissions on a bill amending the Local Government Act 2002. One of those submissions came from Hutt City Council Mayor Ray Wallace.
We support the drive for better local services. However, the bill puts me in mind of Mark Twain's words, if I had more time, I would have written a much shorter letter. So we are concerned that the bill's objectives are somewhat blurred by unnecessary fuzzy requirements and language, unresolved contradictions, and loosely prescribed processes on local self-determination.
Or put another way, by Greater Wellington Council Chairman Chris Laidlaw.
This bill is riddled with flaws and unintended consequences. It needs to be carefully reconsidered, this time in conversation with a local government community that is particularly incensed at its implications.
Mr. Laidlaw cited concerns about the bill's granting of wide-ranging powers for the Local Government Commission and changes to provisions around council-controlled organisations, which he said would diminish local democracy.
My council is therefore unable to support it in its current form. It needs significant work to provide a clear framework for the future.
Greater Wellington Regional Council Chairman Chris Laidlaw with that submission on the Local Government Act 2002 Amendment Bill to the Local Government and Environment Committee. Meanwhile, there were dramatic scenes in the House when Labour's David Parker was ordered to leave the chamber by the Speaker David Carter. The incident was sparked by opposition interjections during Building and Housing Minister Nick Smith's answer to this question from his Labour shadow Phil Twyford.
Why does he think that building 9,000 houses a year in Auckland is a record building boom when more than 12,000 a year were being built a decade ago?
The Honourable Dr. Nick Smith.
Mr. Speaker, the average number of houses built in Auckland per year over the last 25 years is about 7,000. The average that was achieved in the previous government for one year in 2003.
Order. There's little point in answering the question. The members aren't interested.
Mr. Speaker.
Nick Smith raised a point of order with the Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, if you are to adopt the approach that screaming and yelling from the opposition benches means that a minister is not able to answer the question. It only encourages screaming and yelling from the opposition benches.
I don't agree at all.
David Carter explained his decision to cut the minister's answer short.
If the question is asked by an opposition member and then that level of barrage occurs, I will on occasions cease the answer by a minister. If members want to listen to the answer, the question that their own party asks, I expect them to deliver some sort of decorum and cooperation to the answer while it's been delivered.
And that's when David Parker rose to his feet.
Point of order, sir.
The Honourable David Parker.
Sir, I think the Minister makes a fair point that I agree that you have a duty to keep order. I agree that you at times have a duty to tell the opposition to be quiet, or indeed government members to be quiet. But if any member on either side of this House can frustrate the purpose of this House by being disorderly, then that runs against the purpose of question time. So, sir, I think that the ruling that you've given, I accept it in respect of this instance, but if you're trying to make a general ruling that because of disorder, answers should be truncated, I think that's wrong in principle.
Order.
The Speaker stood by his ruling.
When it's a single member attempting to disrupt the proceedings by yelling and screaming from my left-hand side, that point may be absolutely valid. But when it was an orchestrated litany of barrage from a large number of front-bench members, then second-row members, that is disruptive. And I can deal with it either the way I have, which I will choose to do on some occasion, or I can deal with it more severely by asking members to leave the chamber. And they're the two options that I have, and they are the two options which I will not hesitate to use.
Mr. Parker, though, wasn't satisfied with the ruling and, before raising another point of order, received a warning from the Speaker.
I warn the member, if he attempts to relitigate this matter again on this particular point of order, he will be immediately asked to leave the chamber. I cannot be clearer.
Point of order, sir.
First point of order, the Honourable David Parker.
Sir, when ministers answer questions either from their own side or from the other side, they're addressing the House, not the person who asks the question.
And that is exactly relitigating the matter I've just dealt with. I ask the member now to leave the chamber.
Soon after Mr. Parker had gathered his papers and left the chamber, he found support from further along the opposition benches.
Point of order, the Right Honourable Winston
Speaker, Speaker, I want to put on record the feelings of New Zealand First with respect to the treatment of the Honourable David Parker. This is a very senior, highly qualified, academically highly respected Member of Parliament, no, across the board, and when I see someone of that background being treated that way, and my colleagues said that way, we are not at all happy with it. To say to a member of that seniority,
order,
that if he doesn't desist,
order,
he's going to be...
Order. The members had the opportunity to put it on record. It's not actually a point of order.
With that made clear by the Speaker, Winston Peters took another shot.
Now, what's the point of order?
Well, my point of order, sir, is that every member of Parliament has got cause and authority to say that what's happening here is likely to lead to serious disruption. That is a matter of a point of order.
I've allowed the member to make his point. If he wants to take it further, he knows how to do it. Question number 8.
An overhaul of government spy agencies was the subject of a bill up for debate before the House adjourned for the weekend. The New Zealand Intelligence and Security Bill is in the name of the Prime Minister, John Key, who left it up to his Attorney General to launch its first reading.
The Honourable Chris Finlayson.
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Prime Minister, I move that the New Zealand Intelligence and Security Bill be now read a first time.
Mr. Finlayson said the bill was the legislative response to an independent review of the country's intelligence agencies undertaken by Sir Michael Cullen and Dame Patsy Reddy, and would replace 4 current acts of Parliament so that all legislation relating to the spy agencies and their oversight would be set out in one place.
Under the new regime, New Zealanders will only be targeted on national security grounds unless the person is an agent of a foreign power. For example, if a New Zealander was working for a foreign government. Mr. Speaker, this is a very important change from the current NZSIS legislation, which allows New Zealanders to be targeted for wider economic well-being and international relations grounds. 2 of the 3 grounds for targeting people disappear.
Mr. Finlayson called for cross-party support for the changes.
By reiterating the remarks of the Prime Minister about the importance of achieving a bipartisan or multipartisan approach to this very important national security legislation.
Christopher Finlayson was followed in the debate by Labor leader Andrew Little.
Mr. Speaker, the bill is a good start, and for that reason, Labor will be supporting the bill at this reading, and we look forward to a good discussion and a good examination at the Select Committee. The bill is a good start, but there remain issues.
Mr. Little said it was important to set clear definitions in the legislation.
We do need to understand exactly what national security means. What is a threat to the safety of New Zealanders? And what is a threat to a New Zealand government operation? Because protests in the high streets of New Zealand may amount to a threat to the operations of at least a government department. But that should not be a basis on which people are prevented from expressing their dissent or their opposition or showing protest. So the definition is vital. We do need to get it right because it is so important to this piece of legislation.
Also speaking in the debate was Greens co-leader Matidia Ture, who said her party would vote against the bill's first reading due to concerns about the spy agencies.
No doubt they will be working on these issues, but if these agencies and the government who oversees them wants these agencies to have increased power to gather information about New Zealanders and what we all do, they need to prove they are responsible enough to manage that information, and they have not proven it yet.
Matidia Ture also called for better oversight of the agencies, including at a parliamentary level.
I think it was very unfortunate and quite improper, actually, for the Prime Minister to say that the Greens or others who might disagree with him should not be represented on the parliamentary committee which provides oversight of the intelligence and security agencies. So, Sue, we want to see that committee expanded, which is critical in a representative democracy that we are elected here to uphold.
Meanwhile, New Zealand First's Dennis O'Rourke said his party would vote in favour of the bill at first reading.
New Zealand First seeks better arrangements than we currently have to ensure the protection we need in a very troubled world, but not at the price of the freedoms and privacy that Kiwis are entitled to expect. We will support the bill to the Select Committee to pursue these dual objectives.
The bill was later sent to the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee after passing its first reading by 106 votes to 15, with National, Labour, the Māori Party Act and New Zealand First in favour, and the Greens and United Future's Peter Dunn opposed.
That's report from Eastline. Now for the government's business statement from Gerry Brownlee.
When the House resumes on Tuesday, the 23rd of August, I intend to move the sitting of the House be extended from 9am on Wednesday the 24th of August 2016 for the consideration of the committee stage of the Smoke-Free Environments Tobacco Standardised Packaging Amendment Bill, the committee stage of the Judicature Modernisation Bill and the second reading of the Statutes Amendment Bill, and that the House adjourn at 11:30am for the State Luncheon honouring the service of the Right Honourable Lieutenant General Sir Gerry Matapirai as Governor General of New Zealand. The government will also complete the first reading of the subordinate legislation bill and will look to progress a number of other bills on the order paper. Wednesday, the 24th of August, will be a Members' Day.
The Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee. I'm Tom Frewin, and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.